Well, as I said in the notices, we're starting a series now, a little series where we're thinking about homes that glorify God. And we're going to think about this in terms of different relationships. We're going to spend three of the sermons thinking about marriage, starting with this one. Next week, actually, we don't do the next one in the series on marriage because it's an all-age service. We're going to think about children and parents. Then the two after that are coming back to marriage. Then next one's going to be, we're going to have Trevor Archer, who was senior pastor at Chessington Evangelical Church. He's coming along to speak for us on honouring your parents, whatever their age. And then last one in the series is going to be about singleness. And so we're starting off today thinking about marriage. Now, why spend more time thinking about marriage rather than the other ones? Well, I hope in a way that that doesn't need explaining. I mean, it does seem like there is so much misunderstanding about marriage. And marriage is just in the headlines a lot at the moment, isn't it? The government have put forward this proposal to try to think about changing the definition of marriage. Nick Clegg recently said, gay marriage must happen now, which is a very strong statement saying that we've got to redefine marriage. Well, is that a good thing? Is it a right thing to do? Also, it seems people aren't really all that sure what marriage is about. What is marriage? Less and less people are getting married. Apparently, the number of people getting married in 2008 was the lowest since 1895. So the number of people wanting to get married is just going down and down. And the number of those who do get married who end up getting divorced is frighteningly high. A statistic from the Office of National Statistics of those who got married in 1995, of those who got married in 1995, a third were divorced before their 15th wedding anniversary. Which just shows that even though some people do still want to get married, it seems like we don't really know what marriage is about, nor how to keep it going. There's much misunderstanding about what love is and what marriage is, even amongst Christians. And pastorally, marriages just struggle at times. And I'm not singling anyone out in the church family when I say that. There are just difficulties in marriages. And therefore, it's really important that we as a church have teaching about marriage and that we look at the Bible and say, look, what does God say about what marriage is? What does the Bible say? We've titled the ones about marriage, How to Transform Your Marriage Without Changing Your Spouse. Because you can do it. You can transform your marriage, not through me being an expert marriage counselor, because I'm not. I'm not trained as a marriage counselor at all. But actually, if we come to the Bible and we see what God says about marriage and take seriously what he says about marriage, it can transform a marriage. Now, there is lots that could be said about marriage. I mean, there are books and books and books. I've brought several with me, actually. And actually, I need that one to refer to in a few minutes, so I'll just grab it. There are books and books and books about marriage. There is loads that could be said from the Bible about marriage. And I've therefore made a bit of a decision on this, that we're going to cover less, but hopefully cover it more thoroughly. So cover less, but actually I want you to take away, and particularly if you're married, take away some questions that you will talk about together. All right, so this isn't just going to be an offloading of information about marriage. This is going to be focusing in on a few bits that hopefully you will then take away and, if you're married, talk about. And actually, there are applications for if you're not married as well, but that we will really focus in on those few things and actually that they would make a difference. And hopefully it whets your appetite to go and buy that Tim Keller book and maybe other books on marriage. There are just so many out there, good ones out there. So get them and read them. Please. And I hope that whatever your situation, whether you're happily married, struggling and single, wanting to get married, single and hurting, single and content, whatever your situation, I hope that actually you will find these sermons helpful. Okay, so we're going to look, first of all, at this Genesis passage in Genesis chapter 2. So you'll need the Bible open, please, at page 4 and 5, because we're going to focus in on that passage. That is the foundational passage about marriage. Jesus, when he's talking about marriage, goes to a verse in this passage. Paul, when talking about marriage, goes to verses in this passage. They're sort of saying, this is the foundation. You want to know what marriage is all about? Go to Genesis chapter 2. That is the foundation for what marriage is. And the first thing that we need to see here is, God made marriage. Fundamental, but really, really important. God made marriage. John Piper, in his book on marriage, just picks that out as the first thing you've got to understand about marriage. God made it. And that comes through very strongly in these verses. It is all God's initiative. So if you notice, God made Adam and put him in this garden. And throughout the creation account, if you've gone through chapter 1 and into chapter 2, time and again it says, this is good, this is good, this is good. All through creation, and when God looks at the whole of creation, he says, this is very good. But the first thing that God says is not good is there in verse 18. The Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. So the first thing that's not good is that Adam is on his own. And so what follows is God then parades in front of Adam a whole load of animals. Well, all the animals. He parades them in front of him and Adam names them. And not surprisingly, you get to the end of the queue of animals that have all gone past, this safari park of animals that have gone past. And they say, well, none of them were suitable. None of them's a suitable companion for Adam. And so God makes a woman. Now, don't get caught up in verse 18 when it says, I will make a helper suitable for him. The word helper is not a derogatory term at all. In the Bible, God is described as man's helper. And therefore, it's not a derogatory term at all. But God says, I will make someone to be with Adam. And he causes Adam, the man, to fall into a deep sleep, verse 21. And he takes a rib out of Adam and makes woman. And in this process, which starts off with God saying, right, I make Adam fall asleep, and he takes a bit out of Adam, he then brings the woman to Adam, and it's as if, having taken them apart, he then says, now come back together. And interestingly, and Piper says again, one of the interesting things here is that God is the first person to give a bride away. He does that. He gives this bride away. Verse 22, he says, then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. This is God giving away the first bride. And so we need to see here, this was all God's design. It was God's plan right from the start that he would make marriage. Therefore, I think it's fairly obvious. Since God created marriage, God has the right to define marriage. We don't have the right to redefine marriage. We can't do that because we didn't make it. God made marriage. And anywhere where you see through the Bible, relationships, sexual relationships, which go outside of the Genesis 2 parameters, it's always seen as a bad thing in the Bible. God defines marriage, and the way you find out what marriage is in Genesis 2, and therefore we have to say, marriage is, it's a man and a woman for life together. That is the definition. That is what marriage is according to the Bible. That is what constitutes marriage. Now, you may want to come back to me on that afterwards. That's fine. Do have a talk with me about that. And therefore, I would encourage you, that Coalition for Marriage, if there's still time to sign up for that, I would encourage you to sign that, to say, actually, that's a Coalition for Marriage is saying, actually, we don't want marriage to be redefined in this country. But actually, even if the government does redefine it, actually it doesn't redefine marriage because God defines marriage. So, oh, and just on a, yeah, just as a little aside, it may be, I mean, obviously that brings up whole loads of issues about homosexuality, about gay marriage, all that sort of thing. If you know someone at work or in your family who is gay, I don't think this thing gives you the right to go along and just sort of bash them and say, you're wrong. I think what we want to do there is to love those people. And the first thing we want to talk to them about is not actually marriage. The first thing I want to talk to anyone about who isn't a Christian is Jesus and his lordship. Yes, if they raise the subject, maybe we do need to talk about it. But it's not where you're going to want to start. The place you want to start is the lordship of Jesus. And so I would encourage you in on that sort of conversation first, rather than in on talking about homosexuality. But again, more things to talk about, and if you want to ask me about that afterwards, I'd be happy to do so. Okay, so God made marriage, and therefore God defines marriage. Second, God made marriage for friendship. Now we see this in God saying it's not good for man to be alone. Now, there's much more to say about the purpose of marriage. There is more than, I mean, it's more than friendship, but it is friendship. You see there that what God said is, it's not good for Adam to be on his own. He needs someone with him. And interestingly, God doesn't just say at that point, well, Adam, you've got me. He says, no, I'm going to make someone to be with you. And he makes the woman. Now, the idea of friendship and companionship, that is vital for marriage. And I want us to focus in on that and to sort of dwell on that for the rest of this sermon. So this idea that friendship, companionship, is why God made marriage. And yet, the friendship can so easily drift. Mark and Grace Driscoll, who wrote this book, they do a great chapter on friendship. And they quite rightly say, actually, lots of books on marriage don't focus on the friendship side of things. Yet it is clearly there in Genesis 2, is saying, God is saying, look, that's what I did. I saw this wasn't good, that Adam was on his own, so I provided with him with a companion. And not just someone to be with him, but, verse 24, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Now, that is about sex, but it's about more than sex. It's about the two becoming one, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually, and sort of this coming together, this deep, lasting friendship. And yet, as I say, that friendship can so easily get lost. So, the Driscolls in their book say this: marriage often starts out as a journey between friends. It gets off course as friends become business partners trying to pay the bills, parents trying to raise the kids, caregivers trying to tend to aging parents, cab drivers trying to shuttle family members to various events, event planners trying to pull off everything from holidays to birthday parties, and lovers trying to keep the flames of passion hot. Perhaps the key is to always be working on the friendship, because in the end, the rest of marriage seems to come together more easily and happily when you're working on it with your friend. There's a fun way... Oh, no, hang on. That's where I was supposed to finish quoting. So working on the friendship is vital. You see, when you get married, the friendship is often strong because you've unwittingly done things to keep it strong or make it strong. You go out, you spend time together, you do things that you like doing together. And yet, when you get married, so often the other things come in, and so you do less of the things that you enjoyed doing to begin with, and so the business and the jobs that need to be done just take over. And the thing that you just assume will always be there, the friendship, can die. And I think when people say, we've drifted apart, we've fallen out of love, those sorts of things, they sound passive, they sound like, well, we couldn't help it. But I think in some cases what's happened is they just haven't spent time on the friendship and being good friends together. The friendship is really important. That's what God made marriage for, to be a companion with one another. And you see this expressed in the Song of Songs. Song of Songs, which is a wonderful book about a couple and their romantic love for one another. But actually, as part of it, they say, one of them says, "This is my lover, and this is my friend." Okay, so how's that actually going to happen? How is that friendship going to grow? Well, it takes time, and it takes energy, and it takes planning, which makes it sound far too clinical, because actually it should be a lot of fun as well. But actually, if you don't put the effort into the friendship, it dies. And it does mean that you need to be together. If you're married, you need to be together a good amount of the time. After all, God made Adam and Eve to be together. If you spend too much time apart, actually it's just not what marriage was there for. It's to bring you together. Now, each couple needs different amounts of time together, and so you can't say, you know, within your week you need to spend this amount of time together, and then the friendship will grow. You just can't do that, because different couples need different amounts of time together. Some need more time, some need a bit less. And so here's one of the questions I want you to ask one another. If you're married, God made marriage for friendship, so are you spending enough time together for your friendship to grow? And if not, what needs to change? Are you spending enough time together for your friendship to grow? Now, really important on that, I would encourage you to, at some point over the next week, have some time where you talk to each other about this, where you have an honest conversation about this. And if one of you answers that question no, the answer is no. Okay? If one of you says, "No, I don't think we do spend enough time together," then the answer is you don't spend enough time together. The answer is not, hang on a minute, I do this and I do that and I do the other. No, actually, if the answer is no, the answer is no. And therefore, what are you going to change? Now, that's not necessarily easy to know what to change or how to change it. But something does need to change. You see, if you're saying, "No, actually, we don't spend enough time together for the friendship to develop," then actually you've got to be really careful, because in your wedding vows, you have promised that you will love this other person. We come on to talking about wedding vows and covenant and all that kind of stuff in a future talk. But you have promised you will love this person above all other people, above all other things. Other than God, this is the number one person in your life, other than God. And therefore, if you're saying, "Well, look, I can't spend enough time with you because I need to go and do this or I need to go and do that," then actually you're saying, "No, that other thing is more important to me than our marriage." Be careful there. Be really careful. Now, of course, you've got to go and work. You have got to go and do that. But even there, I want to ask, does your work give you enough hours with your husband or wife? That can be difficult. How do you work that one out? Bev and I, we had to make a difficult decision in terms of when we were looking for a job. I think I might have mentioned this one to some people. When we were looking for a job before we came here, there was one job that came up which just seemed perfect for us. Well, actually, it didn't seem perfect for us. It seemed perfect for me. The role seemed really, really good. But we felt that the amount of time that was required was, for us, it would have made actually having time together really difficult. We felt the expectations for us were far too much. And therefore, it was a nervous time at the time, because at that point, that was the only job we had lined up, and we had an end point to our previous job, to my previous job, and therefore, we had to find something, and that seemed like it had come up at just the right time, all that sort of thing. But yet we said, "No, we're not going to go for that job, and we'll trust God to provide." And we're very glad God has provided this job, and we still need to keep saying, even in this job, are we spending enough time together? But sometimes it does mean making decisions about work and about hours. And I throw that one out to you and I leave that with you to say, look, do you need to make any changes there? Ask each other that question. Now, Okay, still on this, marriage for friendship, it's not just about... Oh, hang on, no, go back. Okay, time together. Just a suggestion, another suggestion. Are you spending time, if you've got little children, are you spending some time where it's just the two of you? Where you take grandchildren to their grandparents, your children to grandparents, leave them there. Grandparents love it. They particularly love it if you're not there. Is that right, Grandpa? Sometimes. Okay, I won't ask for nods or shakes of heads because that may completely undermine my point. But often, grandparents absolutely love it. They get the grandchildren, they have that without the parents around, they love it. So therefore, look for those opportunities to say to grandparents, can you have your grandchildren for a night or two and we'll go away and spend time together. If it's not grandparents, maybe that's not possible. Friends, members of the church family, within your home group, you want to be careful. You want to make sure that the children know the people. But develop those friendships so that that can happen. That is really important. Someone gave us that tip when Bev and I had just got married. When you have children, you must have at least one time in the year where you leave children with grandparents and you go off and have time together. Are you doing that? And if you're not married, actually, can you be looking for opportunities to offer that to people or to pray for marriages? That people will have enough time together. Okay, back to what we were saying before, what I was about to say, which was, it's not just about spending time together, it's about what you do in that time. Okay, so it's all very well having time together, but what do you actually, how do you actually develop that friendship? Mark and Grace Driscoll, very helpfully in this, suggest there are three kinds of marriage. Okay, three kinds of marriage. Back to back, shoulder to shoulder, and face to face. And they say, well, which is yours? Are you back to back, shoulder to shoulder, face to face? Back to back is, you're pretty much living separately. Yeah, okay, you're in the same house, but you're pretty much living separate lives. And that can happen. And we don't want that. Shoulder to shoulder is, you're doing things together. You're doing tasks together. So you will make decisions together and you will, you'll do the school thing, you'll do the parenting thing, and you will do things together, which is a good thing to do. Face to face is, we talk to one another and we listen to one another and we have conversations. And it's close and it's intimate and we actually have face to face time. Now, clearly, don't work on being back-to-back, but we should work on the shoulder-to-shoulder and the face-to-face. And the Driscolls very helpfully say, men, generally, when we build up friendships, we do it shoulder-to-shoulder with people. So we do it around a common task, or we're in a sports club, or and there's a task that we do, and we're friends together because we've got that task that we do. And therefore, he suggests, and I think it's probably a good thing to suggest, wives, in building that friendship with your husband, maybe there is a bit of shoulder to shoulder. Now, I'm not saying you join the football team and you're alongside and you're shoulder, yeah, I'm with you. That might not work so well. But showing an interest in what they're into. Maybe it is football. Maybe it is going along to watch football matches sometimes, even if you're not that interested in it. Because you're saying, I'm with you, and I want to know what you're about, and I want to know what you're interested in. And I just want to be your friend. And so maybe it is watching the football this evening with your husband, or husband with your wife. Maybe she's more into the football than you are. So that's the shoulder to shoulder. It's doing things together. The face to face, we need to work on that as well. And again, the Driscolls suggest that actually women are better at developing relationships along this line, where they will talk to one another and listen to one another. And guys, that means we need to be good at listening. And at spending that time with our wives. And actually being in the same room as your wife. Now, I mean that not just physically, mentally in the same room. That's easy to fall down on, isn't it? You're in the same room physically, but you're thinking about the task that you've got to do. You're thinking about all that list of things you've got to do at work, the thing that went well today, the thing that's troubling you at work. You're not really actually even in the room properly. And so it is that thing of saying, no, we've got to listen. We've got to be there. And show that we are actually paying attention to what our wives are saying. And listen properly, listen well, listen to what they're saying. And when you're talking, yeah, this is going to sound all touchy-feely, actually talk about how you're feeling about things. Oh, I know, for some guys that's, I don't find that too bad actually, but for some guys that's really hard. You see, there are different levels of speaking. Sometimes you just talk about, you can talk about, say hello to one, to people. That's not a very deep friendship. You can share opinions. That's getting a bit deeper. You can share feelings. That's the deepest way of communicating. So it's saying what you're feeling about things and listening to one another and hearing what you're saying. You see, it's not just about spending time together. It's about spending time together that builds that friendship and brings you together. Just to finish, Bev and I, when we were first married, we used to get out to the cinema a fair bit before we had children. And then we went to theological college, and there were lots of families there. And we were shocked. We talked to the couples, and they didn't go out to the cinema. If they went out, they did other things. But then we realized why, when we had children. Because if in an evening you've got time and you've got a babysitter coming and you go to the cinema, you're not really developing the friendship. You're just sitting there in the same room looking at the screen. Now, it's not wrong to go to the cinema. It's good to go to the cinema. It's all right to go to the cinema. But actually, it doesn't really develop the friendship. And so we can see now, we haven't been to the cinema in ages. Because when we go out, we want to spend that time, having a meal together and actually trying to have some of that face-to-face time. So, okay, here are the questions to take away if you're married. Are you spending enough time together for your friendship to grow? If not, what needs to change? And second, is your marriage back-to-back, shoulder-to-shoulder, or face-to-face, and how can you work on this? Now, if you're not married, can I ask you, you do have an important role to play in this. That you would pray for marriages, because often these things don't happen. You may think, if you've been married for ages, you may think, oh, well, that's obvious. Often these things don't happen. And so please pray for marriages, and please encourage married people. You may think, the temptation is to think, I think if you're single, the temptation can be to think, oh, well, it's much rosier if you're married. Sometimes it's not. And therefore, please pray for marriages, that marriages would be good in this church family, but also with your friends and with your families, and that you would pray and look for opportunities to encourage those friendships to grow. We're going to stop there, and we'll come back to think more about marriage. Oh, hello. Have we got those questions on bits of paper? Fantastic. Great. I really want you to go away and talk about these things, and therefore we've got a stack of those questions. You can take them away, and you can ask them, and I will ask you next week whether you did it. And you can ask me whether I talked with Bev about this.